telco is at an existential point in the industry, kind of a turning point. And sometimes the biggest enemy of telcos are the telcos themselves. They are built on a certain culture and a certain rhythm of business that's appropriately conservative, right? Because these are networks that have had to run 24/7 for like 50 years. Yet, as you know, there's so many new technologies and things happening out there that it requires an agility and a solutions mindset.
Welcome to the 5G Guys podcast, the best resource for newcomers and industry insiders alike to explore not just 5G, but anything technology and telecommunications. We explore and discuss technology with guests of varying backgrounds and expertise to help you learn and stay current. So let's dive right in. Welcome the 5G guys themselves, hosts Dan McVaugh and Wayne Smith.
Welcome back to another episode of the 5G guys. I'm Wayne Smith, and I'm joined by my co-host, Dan McVaugh.
Hey, Wayne. Hey, everyone. Welcome back for another episode. Real quick reminder that we've recently kicked off a newsletter. If you haven't subscribed, go to 5gguys.com. Give us your info. We do a Friday, we do a newsletter that gives you the top 3 to 4 really interesting technology news items. So check that out if you have not already. Today, we're excited to have a repeat guest on. We had Pete Bernard on way back in season one, almost 2 years ago, when he was working at Microsoft, where he was a principal in their group focused on Internet of Things and edge computing, among other things. And Pete has now got a new gig with a company called Edge Celsius that he started up, and we're excited to have him back on. Edge Celsius is a new kind of technology practice where they combine industry analytics, content publishing, and then a lot of strategy work for other companies. Pete, welcome back. Great to have you on.
Yeah, great to have you. Great to be on here. And like I said, yeah, it was fun being on there way back when you guys were getting started. And I've been a pretty loyal listener since then. And yeah, great to be back on the airwaves here.
Welcome back, Pete. You want to catch us up on the new business after Microsoft?
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, I mean, I spent 18 years there, which to be honest with you, when I got started there, I didn't think I'd be spending 18 years there, but all of a sudden, poof, there it goes. I'd spent like 14 years prior to that in Silicon Valley doing small company stuff, you know, embedded Java and some telco things and firmware, and then came to Microsoft really to work on most of their phone efforts. I kind of came in as a phone person and did a lot of things there. You know, we shut the phone business down around 2016. And since then I shifted out to more, you know, things connected to the cloud over cellular, over unlicensed and licensed spectrum, you know, working with semiconductor partners, you know, built and shipped a bunch of projects there. But, you know, Microsoft had changed their strategy in the past couple of years around edge and IoT and, you know, probably appropriately focusing more on sort of the heavy edge cloud business, which is really their high margin business. So I left about a year ago and, you know, had a lot of interest from companies on different projects and things going on in the edge computing space. As you know, it's just a hot space and the intersection of AI, edge, 5G, which has kind of been my forte the past few years, has really continued to be just an amazing point of innovation. So I decided to create Edge Celsius to focus on that area. And it's a combination, as you mentioned, of, you know, educating people about the tech, what's really happening out there, what's, you know, what's real versus what's the hype, and doing that. And I do that for the technology ecosystem. I work with, you know, investors and other folks interested in the market. And then I work with some companies on helping them scale their business, because it turns out that in the edge compute business, if you're not scaling, you're going to die. So it's kind of one of the two things. You got to get to scale. And that usually means partnering up with some other companies and figuring out how to kind of align roadmaps and kind of intersecting some open standards and things like that. So I help companies sort of add a zero to their business where they want to sort of take it to the next level. So that keeps me pretty busy here.
Well, congratulations on the new biz, and I've been following you as well. And I know one of the things as we kind of caught up recently and decided to have you on again was some of the content publishing you're doing is really good. If you guys haven't checked him out, you should check him out. And one series in particular that really resonated with Wayne and I that we're going to talk about today was your series called Saving Telco from Itself. So why don't you tee that up and we're just going to go off and share our give and take on that topic. I think it'll be a fun one.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a hot topic. I mean, Mobile World Congress is kind of winding down this week. It's been a pretty tumultuous year for telco. You know, I've been working with telcos for probably a couple of decades now and seeing that whole arc of how they've evolved their business models and things. And I think the title kind of says it all. You know, telco is at an existential point, you know, in the industry. It's kind of a turning point. And sometimes the biggest enemy of telcos are the telcos themselves, you know, and they are built on a certain culture and a certain rhythm of business that's, you know, appropriately conservative, right? Because these are networks that have had to run 24/7 for like 50 years and are mission critical. So they are not, you know, run fast and break things kind of attitude like you would see in Silicon Valley. Yet, as you know, there's so many new technologies and things happening out there that it requires an agility and a solutions mindset change, you know, to really take advantage of what's going on, whether it's AI or, you know, high performance, low power semiconductors or all kinds of different kind of radio technologies beyond kind of 5G. And so that was kind of what the whole piece was about. In fact, there's an article in Forbes today called Saving Telco from Itself, which is from me as well. So good timing on the topic. But basically the idea is that, as I mentioned, the telco industry is kind of inherently conservative, yet it is sort of like foundational to a lot of the tech that's happening today. You know, if you looked at Brad Smith, who's president of Microsoft, had a keynote at MWC this week. He talked about the AI economy. At the base level of the AI economy are two things: electricity and connectivity, right? So you cannot have all this kind of kooky AI stuff going on without great connectivity. Yeah, sometimes that's fiber, sure, but it's also, you know, unlicensed and licensed spectrum. So telco's kind of really in the middle of it, but they have really struggled very publicly, as well as telco info providers, to really capitalize on a lot of the innovations that have been happening for the past decade or two outside of telco, right? They've become, you know, dumb pipes, quote unquote. They have, you know, had folks take advantage of and build businesses on their networks where they have not been able to, you know, profit from that. So I outline like kind of five different areas that I can just quickly talk about in terms of how telco could save itself from itself. First one is that's a solutions mindset, right? It's like, how do you go from being a pipe provider to a solution provider, right? And because that's what people want. They want solutions to their problems these days. Right. And just giving them a pipe, or at Microsoft, we used to say, you know, don't ship a chemistry set, right? You got to actually give them the solution. And that's tough, right? Companies like Telstra have done a really good job at that. They're solution providers. There's, you know, other folks doing that as well. The second one is really investing in software. You know, telcos are not really known for their software expertise, right? I mean, they're not software companies. Yeah. I would say automotive companies are also in the same boat here. Automotive companies are metal benders that are now understanding the importance of software. Same with telcos, you know, developing software, updating software, you know, the whole, you know, CICD, you know, DevOps, all that stuff. It's really not part of their DNA, but they need to embrace software as a key expertise. The third one was embrace the edge. And so this is, you've seen a lot of this at MWC this week. Actually, someone out there was using the term edge washing, where people are using the term edge for everything. It's edge all over the place. But yeah, you know, telcos, this is kind of one of their advantages, is that they are, you know, relative to the hyperscalers, they are out there with points of presence. They have real estate, they have cell towers, they are out there where the action is, where the data is happening. And so somehow they need to figure out how to embrace the edge, and we can talk about that. The fourth one was following the gravity of open architectures. So kind of prime example, Open RAN. Really tough to take a very closed proprietary ecosystem and sort of crack it open to turn it into bits and pieces that you can swap. It's getting there. We're seeing, you know, AT&T's made announcements, Dish is doing rollouts, Vodafone you know, you're seeing a lot of press releases about Open RAN and Open Architectures, Open Gateway, which is the GSMA's effort, which we can talk about how open that is. And then the fifth one, which I think is a chronic issue and kind of, example number one is MWC this week, is dialing down the Futurama. That's what I call it. So telco industry has a habit of overhyping anything. Satellites, private 5G, fixed wireless access, what you name it. Always overhyped. You know, talking about setting expectations that it always bites people in the butt. And I think that's part of the problem. And so how do you kind of change your storytelling to be a little more kind of practical solution oriented with real value, as opposed to just, you know, I'm going to wear this helmet and play this game and I'm floating in space or whatever. I don't know. So those are kind of like the five elements of saving telco from itself. And we can talk about them, but I think they were all on full display in Barcelona. I mean, you could walk down the aisle in Barcelona and see all five of those things happening at the same time.
And for those that don't know, when Pete says MWC, it's a Mobile World Congress. It is the largest telecommunications conference in the world by a long shot. Like, there's nothing even close, right?
No, I mean, they had north of 100,000 people there.
You know, I think probably the area that jumps out to me when we start talking about this, just everything you said resonates. I spent my first 6 years, I was telco. My first 6 years were working for a carrier, for two different carriers, as a matter of fact. And so I've kind of been able to see it from both sides of the fence. And, you know, I think the biggest thing that jumps out to me is that I don't know that what's going on right now is the first time. You know, there's been cycles of this throughout history of telecommunications, right? Go back to way back in the day when AT&T was a monopoly and the feds broke them up into regional Bell operating companies. And you can go through all these different iterations for cellular in the U.S. It was the mid-90s when they first did the very first spectrum auctions, and they brought upwards of six new cellular competitors to a marketplace that was a duopoly prior to that. And that was a big inflection point. I think the one thing that I always saw that was a big reason for telco struggling and needing to save themselves was complacency and legacy infrastructure, legacy technology that they were so entrenched with that it was really hard to overcome. Whereas the new market entrants, they're starting from scratch, greenfield. They get to pick the latest and greatest and don't have that entrenched technology. Do you think that's a big reason why we're here today?
I think you've seen some of that. I mean, look at like Rakuten in Japan, right? Mm-hmm. They don't have the legacy infrastructure and equipment that like a Docomo would have or a KDDI or someone like that. So, and that's true for any industry. I mean, look at Tesla coming in, right? Mm-hmm. They didn't have the legacy systems and manufacturing that General Motors had. So they could sort of start from scratch and do things, you know, based on new, you know, some new concepts and new technology. So there is that definitely kind of, maybe innovator's dilemma is another way of thinking about it, where you have an existing business, it's running, it's very predictable. And so there's a lot of inertia to not disrupt that business. But guess what? Someone else, your competitor, is going to disrupt your business because that's their plan. So, you know, either you disrupt it or get disrupted. And it's really tough for especially these larger companies that are, you know, like you mentioned, they're kind of quasi-governmental. To a certain extent, they used to be owned by the state, or they kind of have this connection into the government because they have spectrum and blah, blah, blah. And for these big companies to sort of, you know, go through this kind of entrepreneurial disruption, there's a lot of antibodies that come out, you know, to kind of damper that. And that's super tough. But companies that can overcome that and really kind of, you know, move themselves forward to more modern platforms, they need to do it or they will be disrupted. And I think we're going to see that in every market. I think, you know, I mean, Dish is going through some things, but they are coming into the US, you know, with very disruptive things with O-RAN and probably very disruptive pricing and capabilities. Rakuten, I think every market you're going to see these kind of more cloud native disruptors coming into telecom and, you know, shaking things up.
Yeah, you know, one thought for me as you were going through it, and you talked about the open architecture piece of it, the telcos, you know, from my experience, they're just like the power companies or utilities in the U.S. Mm-hmm. You know, they have this government regulatory that says that we need to have this network, this E911 service has to work.
Yeah.
And so when you look at open architecture to span that across so many users, it's really challenging to meet the requirement that the regulatory is making you do and then mm-hmm. be creative and find other solutions. And they're probably both in the same boat. Utilities are far just for the renewable energy, you know, in the mm-hmm. in the innovation there, they're behind the eight ball, just like the carriers are for edge computing, software, right. You know, all of these different things.
Yeah. And then, you know, it's interesting where Brad Smith kind of put connectivity and electricity in the same box as this kind of, you know, now, of course, that's kind of an, a little bit of a backhanded compliment to say, you know, like you're down here in the utility box. We're up here, of course, in the high margin Microsoft box. Right. So just make sure like all the bits flow. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I think power companies are, you know, there's probably some analogies there to telcos, right? They've got this critical infrastructure with a lot of regulatory stuff going on, yet they still need to innovate. Although you're seeing lots of innovation in the power world too, right? I mean, like mm-hmm. virtual power plants and, you know, some utilities are doing some really amazing things, not only with renewables, but just creating a lot more intelligence around and efficiency around transmission and monitoring. It turns out that this is a whole other topic, but there's a tremendous amount of electricity lost in the infrastructure. You know, up to a third to half of electricity is lost from the power plant till it gets to its actual destination. And so companies are innovating to reclaim a lot of that and increase their abilities. So the ones that are going to do that will win. And the other utilities, that are, you know, too hesitant to do that or not able to, you know, will probably end up getting folded in together and something else will happen. But yeah, telco is very similar. How do you innovate within a regulatory framework? How do you make the regulatory framework and your sort of incumbent position work for you?
Yeah.
Right. As opposed to work against you is challenging.
Yeah. And you know, and one of the things you talked about was that traditionally telcos have not really benefited from all of the revenue sources they could from the infrastructure and the technology that they're operating. And a good example of that, right. I think, is in the United States, they have to, because they're regulated, they have to open up access to their network to competitive carriers that can buy access to their network at a subsidized rate base. We had a guest by the name of Peter Schroeder from a company called Telxio last year, and he started a company that's doing unified communications for businesses, right? So it's not just your cell phone. It's just not your landline. It's messaging. It's any way that your customers want to contact you, they can. And it includes, he includes using AI for his tier one customer support. And like hands down is 10 times better. He did a demo of comparing his stuff to Apple's tier one AI attempt at customer support. And it was like completely better. So I think that it's interesting that in the US, that there's that dynamic. But then secondly, one of the things he talked about, he goes, even though there's that dynamic, Dan and Wayne, I started this business in Europe and it was 10 times easier than it is in the US because of the regulatory environment in the US. Mm-hmm. So to Wayne's point, that does definitely hampers the telcos, right? And makes it a little harder than maybe in some other countries from what I can tell.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think sort of telcos need to sort of find their lane. You know, and I think there's sort of like two lanes, frankly. There's one lane, which is like, we're a really smart pipe. We're a smart and efficient pipe. We have great coverage. We have great performance. We have great tariff structures. And if you want to connect anything from like an agricultural moisture sensor up to an automobile, like we have a way to do that for you in a very efficient way and great SLAs and all that stuff. So that's like smart pipe, totally go for it. That's one lane. I think another lane, and you're seeing other telcos, I mentioned Telstra, but there's others, I think SoftBank's in this boat too, is like, we are a solution provider and we use connectivity as a superpower. And so we go in there with, you know, software and solutions and hardware, and we solve problems for your water system. We solve problems for your, you know, transit systems. We solve problems for your electrical grid. and that's who you call, and they put it together and they stand behind it and they monetize that. And that's another lane that telcos can get into. But they got to pick a lane, you know. It's sort of like, which one do you want to be? Like, you can't sort of be like, well, we're a smart pipe and we have some solutions in a catalog and blah, blah, blah. Like that, you know, like Matthew McConaughey always says, don't half-ass it, you know, like if you're going to do it, do it. And there's some telcos out there, that are doing it, and others that are still sort of, you know, trying to figure out their thing. I saw a thing today, this week from Telefonica, and love Telefonica, nice people, been there many times. And they talked about some like cloud, they're going to be a cloud provider for smart cities with low latency and blah, blah, blah. And it was like, ugh, like, what is that? You know? So, you know, just 'cause you have some spare racks in your cages doesn't mean you can be a cloud provider. Take it from me. I mean, working in Azure for a long time, if you want to be a cloud provider, that's a big deal, right? You need services, you need SLAs, you need great pricing, you need go to market, you need all this stuff, developer support. And so, you know, I'm afraid that some of these telcos will consider themselves to be cloud providers now and say like, oh yeah, why not? I've got some racks and some cages and, you know, we'll just put some Kubernetes on there and call it a day. That's probably not going to work. So they have to find the thing that's going to, you know, work for them for like top to bottom. And you have to have the kind of, you know, sales alignment. Like another issue with telcos is the metric for success is subscriber ads, right? I mean, that's been their thing. But if you're in the solutions business, that's not your metric for success. It's not subscriber ads, right? And so how do you sort of pivot your whole sales and go-to-market organization, you know, with, you know, enough resources and metrics to really make that work? So yeah, telcos need to kind of find their lane. And there's at least two good lanes that I know of, and there's probably a couple of, you know, shoulders of the road they want to stay off of.
Well, I mean, you bring up a great point. Dan, you and I may have discussed this, but it's enterprise sales folks at these organizations run like an enterprise sales consulting type sales solution that don't exist. I mean, one of the things that we've come up against with the telco is the open architecture for in-building coverage. It's so expensive for enterprises to bring that, you know, into their premise, whether it's private network or in-building solutions, and the carriers still let that happen. And they're letting these guys go find other ways to get their people connected inside the building. They have to run their business, and it's not effective. So it is that sales part of the organization that doesn't exist in a way like other people are more focused.
Yeah, and what happens is third parties come in and then they basically commoditize the telco, right? So they're like, well, you know, we'll connect you to somebody. Don't worry about it. Just pay us. And now all of a sudden the telco is sort of cut out. Now they become the dumb pipe, right? They're back to the dumb pipe. I mean, they could have been a smart pipe. So if they lean in to be more of a solution provider, you know, they'll get the pipe plus, you know, the solution and margin on that. But it's a big lift. I mean, you know, let's not trivialize it. It's a lot of work. It's a cultural shift inside the company.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, again, having been on the inside, the network was the product, right? We were charging for minutes on the network. We were charging for bytes on the network. We were charging for features that were the network. Voicemail, call forwarding, whatever you want to call it. You know, I'm aging myself now, but to that point, that's just a tool in the toolbox now to help solve a problem, and that's the thinking that's hard. There's still a lot of old dogs with old tricks, right? With age, you know, some of those folks. You take a Verizon, for example. They still have people on their C-suite that go back to the regional Bell operating companies that. You know, we're sort of the legacy of Verizon, for example. And so that's starting to flesh out and it's starting to improve. But to your point, I've always said, follow the money. And if you follow the money and you look at the five biggest telco companies in the US, their market cap is like a 10th or a 16th of what the top five technology companies in the US are, right? So you compare AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, we'll call Comcast and Charter telco companies as well. You compare that. Compare that to Apple, Amazon, Alphabet, or Google, Facebook,
Yeah.
Big difference, right? And what are those guys doing? They're providing solutions to people's problems.
Yeah. Well, an interesting analog. I mean, NVIDIA, you know, one day of stock jump in NVIDIA probably adds a Verizon to their to their valuation.
That's right.
And, you know, NVIDIA, sure, they're an incredible semiconductor company, and that's what they sell, but they also sell an incredible software stack, you know, and an incredible set of tools and an incredible developer community. And so when you partner with NVIDIA, it's not just the chip, right? It's the whole ecosystem around it and the software. And I think the special sauce. That's what really differentiates them from other semiconductor partners. Now, of course, yeah, they have incredible high performance chips that like really crunch the AI, but you know, the way they go to market is in a much more, you know, they think about the whole stack. Mm-hmm. And that's something that some telcos do and some don't. Yeah. So we'll see. I think, you know, coming out of Mobile World Congress, we had, you know, from what I understand, and I've seen all the reporting and talking to folks there, it's like 5G was not really the story this year, right? Because 5G now is all in just deployment mode. Like, just get the 5G standalone done, and it's no longer kind of the exciting story. You know, satellite end-to-end stuff, non-terrestrial networks is kind of interesting, but now people are realizing it's kind of expensive and, you know, there's a lot of power consumption issues, right?
Like, yeah, it doesn't overcome the law of physics. Yeah. It's still thousands of miles away.
Thing, you know, it's like it always had those issues. So now people are kind of rediscovering that challenge. Yeah. Fixed wireless access, you know, people are realizing, oh my God, people are using a lot of data at home. And so maybe this $50 a month thing is not really, you know, profitable. So I think people are scratching their heads like, well, what is the thing that's going to really be transformative for the telco industry? Other than AI, you know, basically replacing workers with something that's like 80% as good. That's kind of my prediction, chatbots everywhere. Maybe they're better, maybe they're worse, but I think that's the next wave. Unfortunately, I think you're going to see a lot of AI based kind of job reductions, frankly, across telco.
We've seen some already. We've seen some in network provisioning and roles like that, you know, bringing equipment in, building sites and the databases. Mm-hmm. AIs, they've done it and they found out that, to your point, that it's not 100% there. Then it takes two humans to go back and fix some of the issues that the AI created. But we're starting to see it in the industry, and it's just an inevitable part of it. But I think a question for me is the edge. And so, you know, that's your background. Where do they see the opportunities that aren't already there? You know, because you have purchasing in a millisecond on the edge and things like that.
Yeah, it's interesting. Michael Dell did a keynote at MWC this week, and he said, you know, bring your AI to the edge. Don't bring your edge to the AI, right? So it's like, rather than saying, well, AI happens in some data center, you know, 120 miles away, have AI, you know, run your AI workloads where the action is, on the edge, at the tower or in the retail, you know, supermarket or at the gas station or wherever. That's where you should be running your AI. And so, because the semiconductors are so much more powerful these days than they were even 5 years ago, the network and connectivity and the ways to connect things are so much better than they were even 5 years ago. There's really no reason why you can't run a lot more computing outside of kind of hyperscaler clouds than you used to. And in fact, we're seeing the pendulum shift away from hyperscalers in many cases to say, you know, do I really need to pay all these monthly fees to Azure and AWS when I can actually run this stuff either on-prem locally or near-prem in like a multi-tenant situation? And I don't have all the connectivity and all the kind of storage charges and other stuff that's happening. Even like I have a major retailer I'm working with, they do a backup of every retail store every night to a hyperscaler cloud. I won't name who it is. And it turns out like that's real expensive. It's like, what if we just did it like a few miles away for like 10 stores, you know, and we'll just do that. And then once a month we'll go to the cloud or something like that. So I think people are now seeing the edge as There's a latency benefit, but there's also just a kind of a cost effectiveness benefit in many cases too.
Yeah. There's an issue that I think the telcos have that I hate to say, I'm not so sure if they can overcome it. And it's that when I first started 30 years ago, that was like the heyday of the AT&T Bell Labs, right? We had these OEMs and that were, you know, manufacturers that were selling into the telcos had some of the best minds in the world working for them, doing a lot of the innovation and the development. Over time, as I've been in the industry, the talent has left the telcos and left the carriers to go into other technology, and the talent pool is way less, right? I don't know how is that overcome without some fundamental change in the business model that is the telcos. They had to do that by requirement in order to keep their business. It's so competitive, right? I mean, it's a constant iterative capital spend year in, year out.
And if
you look at what consumers pay for the product, that's going down as it relates to consumer price index year over year. So profitability is continuing to shrink. So I don't know if they'll ever get the talent back to really compete at the level that other.
Yeah, I mean, they need to get better at software. So there's certainly always opportunities for software engineering, I think, at telcos. I think that's always been kind of a deficit of theirs, right? Mm-hmm. It's like better software, not just writing software, but the whole management, development, deployment, maintenance of software, especially as things get more cloud focused, you know, putting more workloads on hyperscalers and edge computing, you need more software expertise. So I think that's definitely an area that telcos can staff up in. There's a lot of, as we just talked about, a lot of AI expertise required for telcos. Telcos need to staff up. The ones that staff up with more and more software people, I think, will be more and more competitive. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, you haven't seen any telcos leap into like custom silicon. I thought maybe that would start to happen. You know, you have the hyperscalers building their own chips. I think, you have Tesla, but you're going to see probably other automakers building their own kind of SKUs of silicon and semiconductors. Right. You know, is there a place for telcos to start doing that? I'm not sure. Can we get them a competitive advantage by having some of their own silicon? So you might see some talent move in that direction. As that becomes more, you know, the whole way of designing and building semiconductors now is becoming much more, much more modularized, right? And with between chiplets and things like CSS from ARM and stuff, you can actually kind of design and build your own SKUs of semiconductors without having to do it from scratch. So that could also be something that we see telcos do. But like one example of new investment I was documenting around SoftBank is actually building like these little micro edge data centers around Japan. So rather than relying on hyperscalers, they're saying, well, we're going to build edge data centers, these little pods around Japan. Now they're doing that for a couple of reasons. One is to kind of own that IP and own that infrastructure. There's also in Japan, because of the earthquakes and things, they need that kind of redundancy and flexibility. You can't just put like one big data center in one place in Japan and you kind of cross your fingers, right? So it's interesting to see like SoftBank investing in, and we're talking about SoftBank, the telco, investing in kind of their own edge data infrastructure. So we're seeing companies doing things like that. Telcos, some of them are starting to spend money to own some of that IP. And with that requires kind of the expertise to innovate there.
Yeah, interesting thing too. Since we built and maintained so many cell sites, they didn't build them for extra capacity. And it's an operations function to get rid of the old and clear space. Mm. And even some of the carriers, I know T-Mobile and them, just use cabinets versus full-on shelters. So even though they're out there, they're out there at capacity. And not a lot of room in there to innovate, try new things, both from the power and, connectivity side of it.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of these racks and cages were built for, packet switching type workloads, right? Which is like, 25 kilowatts a rack or something like that. Yeah. You can't stuff a bunch of NVIDIA H200s in there, just blow the whole thing open. I mean, you wouldn't be able to cool that or power it. So you can't just stuff a bunch of AI workloads in there either. So a lot of that stuff's going to need to get rebuilt and thought through, especially if you want to bring AI workloads and inferencing to the edge. So that'll be work for somebody for sure.
What are kind of your last thoughts as you kind of wrap up, you know, your 5 points on telco saving on themselves? Mm-hmm. How does this all come together? Give us your one or two predictions of where you think are they going to save themselves and who or how?
Yeah, well, like I said, I think there's at least a couple of lanes identified. You're either going to be a smart pipe provider or you're going to be a solution provider, and you probably should just be optimizing your business for one or the other. It's definitely sort of a bit of an existential point that we're at right now in the telco business. I don't know what MWC 25 is going to look like. I think it'll look a lot different than MWC 24. Because I think, you know, there needs to be some real value created. And you know, we talked about a lot of the challenges that need to be overcome. So I'm looking forward to some of these folks innovating, and especially with edge computing. And that happens to be my specialty. So obviously, if anyone needs kind of an outsider perspective to help them think through these things, I'm certainly available to do that.
Well, thanks for your time, cool. Pete. We always appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
Take care.
Thanks.
You too.
Thanks for listening to the 5G Guys. For more resources and to connect with Dan and Wayne, check out their website at 5gguys.com. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to hit that follow button and share this episode with your friends and family.